And welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, a homeschool father of five. We've been homeschooling our children for, 9 to 21 years out here in Colorado. And, friends, it's getting more difficult to establish a nuclear family. In fact, the nuclear family has become in the minority, which means we will probably be persecuted by the majority. Those who don't believe in functional families, the dysfunctional will be ruling, at least for the time being. The dysfunctional will be taking over, and the functional nuclear families are in the minority and will have a hard time surviving over the years to come, especially if we begin to lose freedoms, a la the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child, the UN Convention for Children with Disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. If we start to see a curtailing of freedom for parents who are functional, in functional families, raising functional children for a functional future, these are the parents that are going to run into troubles, I think, at the hands of the magistrate. Well, friends, Ireland is succumbing to the thing we've been talking about, the problems, the persecution of homeschoolers, rife in places like Sweden, Germany, other places around Europe. But Ireland is now joining the bandwagon. This story comes from thenewamerican.com. The Irish approved an amendment to their national constitution on Saturday that will bring it into compliance with mandates of the United Nations that govern the state's seizure of children. The margin was 57-43%. The Alliance of Parents Against the State campaigned against passage of the referendum on the measure, which APS says will diminish the rights of parents and give the Irish government nearly unbridled power to seize children. That doesn't sound very good. Unbridled power to seize children.
Isn't that kidnapping?
It used to be called that. It's a capital crime in the scriptures, by the way. Even worse, APS charges Irish law will come under the control of the United Nations. The amendment's key words that pertain to the power of the state are best interests, meaning the best interests of the child. Supposedly, a state must always keep the best interests of the child's uppermost in its decision to seize him. Problem is, APS says the state determines what those best interests are. And, of course, that's the idea. The best interests determined by some bureaucrat on the 27th floor of some building who probably doesn't have any kids, probably is a homosexual, probably somebody who was raised in a dysfunctional family by dysfunctional parents who didn't really exist. So he was raised in foster care and eventually started working for the social services. That's the kind of thing that happens, Dave. Don't get me wrong. This kind of thing is scary, especially when they start talking about the best interest of the child, because it's not really defined anywhere. And of course, they're not going to define it by scripture,
which turns out to be best interest of the bureaucrat. Yeah. Which is largely about gaining more power and control.
Right, which means the government is going to want to control these kids. And if they're not attending socialist schools where they're learning how to be good socialists and learning how to say we're not worthy in the presence of bureaucrats and people that rule over them, then chances are that is an unacceptable form of education, and we're going to have to remand them back into the socialist schools and raise them by socialists because these parents are incompetent. that's the kind of thing that happens in the Orwellian state.
Well, or because the parents actually are competent.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they perceive them to be incompetent because the parents aren't socialists and they aren't remanding the kids to a socialist indoctrination program and a safe sodomy program or whatever the state deems to be in the best interest of the kid.
It turns out that the state has a first commandment, too. You shall have no other non-socialist views before you. That socialism is their god. The state is their god, and they will do what it takes to chase out the others. They're willing to be patient.
Oh, no. The Catholic bishops backed the state on this one. I guess no surprise, huh? The church hierarchy has not always done a good job, especially in the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
They've fed into the hands of socialists and Marxists and Nazis and such for many, 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 many years. It's been an unhealthy relationship between this mega, mega, mega church thing and the mega, mega, mega state thing ever since the Holy Roman Empire. Remember back then?
Yeah.
That wasn't all that holy, wasn't all that Roman, and really wasn't much of an empire, but it was a good attempt.
It was confounding of church and state. The church thought it was a state, and the state thought it was the church.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is bad news for the Irish, and I guess the best thing I could tell for Irish folks who listen to the program, by the way, I think we do have about five families listening in Ireland, move to Colorado. Okay, so that's the message. Didn't we say that to people out in Vermont or wherever?
Why would they want to move to Colorado?
You remember the Vermont, I guess, did something or other the other day to outlaw spanking. So we encouraged them to move to Colorado, and maybe, just maybe, we'd have a majority someday. Maybe we'd get together. Maybe we'd actually get, 500,000 righteous people in the whole world, and we'd actually have a place where families could raise their children with freedom. The freedom, you know, not to break God's laws, but the freedom to maximize liberty within the bounds of God's laws.
We can hope. Yeah. We can hope.
Okay, Irish friends, it'll be interesting to have them write into us. If anybody's from Ireland and has been victimized or tyrannized recently by laws like this, please let us know. We're very interested in what's going on in places like Ireland and Sweden and other places around the country and the world. And, oh, by the way, they had an international education seminar on home education. I think it was in Germany. It was in Berlin, if I'm not mistaken, about 2 to 3 weeks ago. I want to get Mike Donnelly from HSLDA on the air with us, Dave, to talk about what happened there. Apparently, all kinds of stories about how so many families have been tyrannized and victimized by the all-powerful state, the socialist states in Eastern Europe and in Germany, Sweden, other places throughout Europe. It's crazy what's going on in Europe. Lots and lots and lots of persecution for families who want to raise their children in some semblance of a biblical approach to things. Right now, the state is extremely powerful in these socialist areas. And, you know, the state is still believing that the dysfunctional family situation is the best way in which to establish a civilization, Dave. I mean, you got places like Sweden where they've got 60-70% of kids born out of wedlock, and this is a good thing for them. This is good. They just think this is the one most wonderful experiment in socialism that's ever been wrought. We have almost a total breakdown of parent-child relationships in Sweden, almost a total breakdown of the family in places like Sweden. Iceland isn't too far off, and the Netherlands, of course, is pretty dysfunctional, pretty far down the pike on this one. And just about every socialist humanist nation around the world has pretty much destroyed their families, and they're experimenting with the non-nuclear family for the next 20, 30 years until civilizations come to a screeching halt. This Brave New World's interesting experiment. We'll see how things work out for them. But in the meantime, there's a couple of guys here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado in my basement, just trying to retain some semblance of a biblical worldview, my friends, in the 21st century. And we're hanging on to, you know, what used to be a socio-economic social system. We're hanging on to a family-based system where a family is the basic building block of churches. A family, a nuclear family, a healthy family is the basic building block for countries, for civilizations, for cultures, for art forms, for just about every single aspect of life. The family is still important. I'm still betting on that fact, still hanging on to the old wisdom from the books of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, into Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the book of Proverbs, that the family is still the basic building block for education, the basic building block for economics, the basic building blocks for political systems. And if the family dies, everything dies. That's our premise. That's what we hold to on this program. And we'll be back in just a moment.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
Folks, back on the Generations Radio broadcast, Kevin Swanson here, hanging on to the old proposition that the family is the basic unit, the basic social unit in a society where you've got 42% of kids born without fathers, up from 6% in 1960, and where half of marriages end in divorce, and the shack-up rate is 10 times what it was in 1970. Really bad. We are assuming that on this program. That's bad. That's really bad. And the people need to repent. So the family is still important. I'm hanging on to that proposition. And unless the family is restructured, civilization dies in the next 40 years.
In the next 40 years.
Yeah. That's my prognostication. I mean, maybe it's 80 years. I don't know. How long does it take to go. This is the first time we've ever really experimented with this. The Romans actually started to see a breakdown of the family right around the time of Augustus. And Augustus brought in some policies that encouraged marriage, encouraged having children, and discouraged divorce. And so that the Roman Empire survived for another 300 years after that.
People have been monkeying with family since the beginning. There's this little town, Sodom. I don't know if you've heard of it. Sodom was monkeying around with what it meant to be a family, and they were destroyed. And then Greece, and Greece didn't last. And then, then Rome was playing around with what was family, and it didn't last. You know, and so when we say family, Kevin, we ought to be very clear what we mean by family. You start out with a man, and you start out with a woman.
Can you go over that one more time? I mean, out there are not sure they can, you know, get through that. Okay, one more time.
One man.
Man. Okay, I got
single.
It. Got it. Single.
One man.
Single man. One man. One man. As in one.
And one woman.
Okay.
Okay.
Hang on. This is hard. This is complicated.
Just one woman.
One woman. So a woman is not a man.
Right. No, okay. she's a woe man.
A woe man. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Okay.
And the man and the woe man are joined together into one marriage. See, one man, one woman, one marriage.
One marriage. Okay.
That's
how the family starts. Okay.
And then from this one man and this one woman in this one marriage comes offspring. Yeah. No, that's in the plural. It could, you know, you start out one, you might get twins, but that's a family. See, that's what a family is. It starts out with one man and one woman.
Very, very complicated for the postmodern mind. Dave, I mean, you're just really stretching the postmodern mind on this one. Okay.
You know, it's interesting. In Uganda, Idi Amin.
The Uganda people still get it.
Right. You know, remember Idi Amin, Uganda, right?
The big bad terrorist guy. Yeah.
Right. In Uganda, we got
all kinds of missionaries in Uganda. We support missionaries out there. There's some good Christian work out there.
And this is the work they're doing.
Yeah,
96% of the population in Uganda believes that homosexuality is bad for society and ought to be removed.
96%?
96%. Wow. That's more than voted for Obama here. Wow,
that's amazing. It sounds a little bit like Josiah. You remember the Josiah, the good king? I mean, you got like one good king in, you know, 500 years of Judah's existence. Anyway, Josiah, you know, one of the things he did was remove the homosexuals from the land. He did that. He says, this homosexuality thing is just not good, and we got to get this out of the land. So he did. I guess he just deported them or something.
See, because that's not one man and one woman.
Okay.
That's one man. See, there's no woe there. Uh-huh. And when there is no woe, you bring a lot of woe on a society.
Okay. All right, friends. Just trying to go over the basics on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. And you know, this whole Uganda thing's bugging the liberals.
Oh, it's bugging them to death.
Oh, man, they don't like that. I guess they're working on some civil punishments on homosexuality, too, which I guess that's not very pleasant for the, civil punishments have existed for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And definitely in Christian areas, there have been very severe discouragements to the public acts of homosexuality and sodomy in the history of the world, my friends.
Kevin, they're talking about the death penalty.
Oh, I know.
They're talking about it's aggravated. It's considered an aggravation if you're homosexual and you have AIDS. You know, Sub-Saharan Africa is being destroyed by the AIDS virus.
Right, I understand.
And so they're saying, if you got AIDS, you're spreading around, you're homosexual.
It's akin to murder, you know. It's akin to putting a gun to someone's head and pulling the trigger, I guess is the way they're looking at it. So if you have AIDS and you're running around spreading AIDS all over the place, just not a good thing to do. People used to call that murder years ago. You know, you put cyanide in people's teeth, that was murder. Put AIDS in someone's drink, that's murder. Okay, that's the way it used to be. But, of course, the homosexuals can't stand this kind of stuff. And, of course, they're the ones leading the disintegration of civilization in the West. So I guess that's the way it works. All right, friends. Speaking of the disintegration of civilization in the West, I got my new Time magazine. Dave, you get Time?
I get Time.
I'll tell you why I get Time magazine, because I get these extra air miles. And occasionally we get these free magazines because we have these air miles we have to use up. Okay, so here's the deal. Mileage Plus.
It's the only way that Time can actually get subscriptions, as it turns out.
That's pretty much it, yeah. Okay, so this is the special commemorative election magazine for Time. And it's a little bit of a Obama fest, you know. And they're just celebrating the whole win. And so I'm looking through this thing. I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about politics because we talked about politics way too much over the last 3 weeks. But they're looking at 2016 and they're saying, well, here's these wonderful people running for office. So I'm running through this and looking at all these neat suited people. And I come across this advertisement for this person named Rihanna. You ever heard of Rihanna? She looks like a cannibal. I mean, right in the middle of all these guys in suits, here is one of the number one music stars in America. I mean, this is the American culture. Now, I'm sitting here looking at this thing, and she doesn't have any clothes on, for one thing. So I'm assuming she's a cannibal.
her elbow is well placed.
Yeah,
in
it
print.
Is. It is, yeah. But she doesn't have any clothes on. It's obvious. And she's apparently got a new album out called Unapologetic. And she's got tattoos all
she's
over
sorry
her body.
About it.
She's nude. She's got tattoos, body mutilation, and so forth. So right smack in the middle of my Time magazine, I have this cannibal that shows up, you know? And this pagan cannibal. I'm thinking to myself, now, wait a minute. I thought I was living in a civilization where, you know, we had kind of done away with cannibalism 800 years ago or 1,200 years ago. You know, I guess I was under the impression that, you know, we had done away with some of this paganism stuff. Anyway, so I get a copy of my Time magazine and I get this picture of this nude cannibal named Rihanna. And evidently, she's very popular. And it's right here next to pictures of Joe Biden. And so now I want you to look at the difference here. There's a, you know, right in the middle of my Time magazine, I get this really, you know, actually well-dressed Joe Biden. And then I get a cannibal over here on this other page. So Dave, I mean, just looking at this thing, I mean, you don't want to stare at the cannibal for too long. It's rather disgusting because she really is kind of shameful and she's betraying, you know, her body parts. But in my Time magazine, I get this nude picture of this very, very popular cultural star. And I'm thinking to myself, what's the connection between Joe Biden and Rihanna?
Other than Joe's looking at her with lust in his eyes?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. But Dave, I mean, he's dressed.
He is dressed.
He's got clothes on. She doesn't. I mean, that's a difference.
That's a difference.
But that's not a huge difference. And here's why. Because I'm not sure Joe Biden is all that different from Rihanna. I mean, have you heard his language? You know, again,
this is a family show.
I know. And we're supposed to respect the office that he bears. I understand that. But we're also, from time to time, supposed to play the part of John the Baptist and point out where, you know, people's private lives and people's private lives that usually become public. And Dave, you know, he loves to use the same kind of language that Rihanna uses. And that's my point. My point is the same kind of language in the culture that he gets in his iPod through his iPod is really the same kind of culture. And so he really bears out the same culture. And the difference is that he's wearing clothes and she isn't. They both make up the macro culture of America today. And I guess for the time being, our politicians will not be wearing loincloths.
For the time
at least for the time being.
For the time being.
I mean, it may be another 4 to 8 years before, I didn't say 48, I said 4 to 8 years before men like Joe Biden are wearing loincloths and strutting around stages with loincloths on as the pagans and cannibals are like to do. And especially that's because the language that's being used by our politicians is very similar to the language used by the cultural heroes that lead the nation. And there have been a number of situations where politicians have been out-popularized by the cultural artistic heroes of the day as well. So you have to remember that. The culture, my friends, is moving more and more towards a deconstructionism and undressing as well, may I say, and the deconstruction of language, the deconstruction of manners, the deconstruction of just about everything. That's why you have your top figures in the world that in our nation, the guys who run our nation using four-letter words that are used by the guttural folks, the people who are pretty much the lowest class. There's hardly any distinction anymore between these things. So, Dave, I just wanted to bring that up to you. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference here between Rihanna and Joe Biden in terms of the language they use, in terms of the culture. Now, again, granted, she's tattooed and she is not wearing clothes. And so she's, I think she's really, if anything, she's really depicting her worldview. People always live out their worldviews. They always live out their fundamental beliefs. And the Western world, I think, Dave, has lost a meaningful faith in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There are so many examples of this. The abandonment of the Christian worldview, I think, is obvious in things like cremation. At one time, they used to bury bodies because they expected a resurrection. Not anymore. They don't believe in the resurrection anymore. They cremate. They do what the cannibals do. They cremate. We're also seeing a widespread acceptance of witchcraft. You know, Harry Potter cannibalism or vampirism, the Twilight series, pagan forms of body mutilation, the wholesale acceptance of homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People now celebrate the Day of the Dead more often than they celebrate Easter, friends. These are the differences, and the differences have to do with the worldview. Their language, their music, their tattoos, their body mutilation, they're effectively reflecting what they really believe. Now, there are some people who say, no, what I really believe is Jesus and stuff. But it turns out that their clothing, their tattoos, their body mutilation, their lives are more reflect a nihilistic worldview, a paganistic worldview, than it does a Christian worldview. Ergo, you have to look at the way people live to understand what they really believe, their true creed. You don't listen to their words. Watch their behavior. And their behavior will eventually reflect the things they really believe. Either they believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, or they don't. And if they don't, they're probably reverting back into paganism.
Well, I think that Joe Biden puts the vice in vice president. I doubt he'll be running around in a loincloth in the next 4 to 8 years, and here's why.
Okay.
Because Victoria's Secret, I don't know if you knew this, they had a fashion show in New York City.
Oh, no. Okay.
You know, New York City is hit by Hurricane Sandy, but they emptied out this airplane hangar. It happened to be temporary quarters for National Guard and other workers, but they needed to have a fashion show. They booked it ahead of time, pre-Sandy. So they have a fashion show there. Now, what happens in this fashion show is, of course, women strut up and down this runway stage in nothing but underwear.
Mm-hmm.
But except it wasn't nothing but underwear.
Mm-hmm.
One of the models was wearing an Indian headdress, you know, like a war bonnet, we used to call them.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the American Indian interest group, was upset. They thought it was disrespectful.
Over what? Over the fact that they were nude? And,
no.
Oh, okay.
No.
I guess that was the pagan end of it. They were okay with that.
They were okay with the nakedness.
Okay, right.
Sure. Right. That part was fine. They were probably okay with a little tattoo here or there. It was that this girl who was not an Indian was wearing the headdress. So you see, if Joe Biden was running around in a loincloth, it would be the same thing as a Victoria's Secret model running around in a headdress.
So they'd be offended.
They'd
be offended by that, yeah,
right.
Because that he's not a Native American.
You realize in Washington, D.C., the newspapers refuse to call the professional football team there by their name.
Okay, got it.
Did you know that?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the Washington Redskins. You'll never read about the Redskins in a Washington
press. Why don't they just change their name?
To what? The Chiefs? No, to the Warriors.
Can't go there either.
To the Tomahawk missiles.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't think Joe Biden will be doing that anytime soon. Kevin, this just shows the lack of a search. Or we have a search for a biblical sexuality. We have women running up and down in their underwear. It turns out Victoria's Secret's not so secret. We have Rihanna in Time magazine here, naked, tattooed, showing her shame to the world. We have Madonna. Here's another story. Madonna says she'll strip on stage, if people will throw money at her, like I guess some kind of cheap dancer sort of thing. But the money will go to the victims of Hurricane Sandy, who will actually pay her probably to put the clothes back on.
Yeah.
We're searching for a biblical sexuality where sexuality belongs in the marriage. It's celebrated. It's wonderful. It's fulfilling. It's two people becoming one. And instead, we're wasting it all on this.
Sure.
This nihilistic death cult.
All right, my friends. It turns out that people will act out the things they really believe. People will act out the things they really believe. And that brings up this World Magazine article called Food and Loathing. And Dave, I thought this was very, very striking. I wasn't aware of some of these things, but this story speaks of eating disorders that wreck lives and families. And she tells five stories in this article, one about herself and one about a 25-year-old Jessica Perez from upstate New York, now with cropped and jet black hair, gray blue eyes and 10 piercings stamped into her ears, lips, nose, belly button. She has 5 hand ink tattoos, thin X-shaped scars stretched across her chest and a waist that bears Harry Potter's Horcrux symbol, remnants of her self-cutting days, severely depressed, self-hating. She cuts and starves herself because that was the only way she knew how to stop her emotional pain. The physical pain is something you control. You can start it. You can make it stop. Something you can't do with depression. On and on and on. Anyway, she talks about her own situation as well. She talks about how the doctors and psychiatrists told her that she would die. My parents and I believed in a eating disorder was primarily a spiritual disease that cannot be healed by force feeding and therapy sessions. God will heal, we believed. The day after the discharge, my hope deflated as I realized I couldn't bring myself to finish a bowl of oatmeal. On and on and on. She went into her freshman year at Northwestern University. She waved goodbye to her parents. She lost weight. She came home desperate to go back to college. I gained more than 30 pounds, but Northwestern denied me readmission. Thus began my bitterness against God and my parents, fueled by the hatred, disgust I felt for myself. And so she goes on and on, and eventually she said that she found God's love.
in herself. So, I mean, even some of those words, Dave, sound really, really self-oriented. So we're still seeing a real, real man-centeredness about it. A hating of myself is what fuels my hate for God. I'm sorry, but she's got the thing put around the wrong way. Still, she's got to wake up to the fact that our hate for ourselves is rooted in our hate for God. Dave, I mean, that's just, there's such a man-centeredness. There's such a human-centeredness, self-centeredness in the way that people think today. And it's played out in how they treat their body. You know, I mean, even to this point, I don't know if she's going to be really, really, really healed. It's hard to know. She says she found the love of God, but she's still placing her hatred for God in her hatred for herself. And as you know, the fundamental problem is not self-esteem. Fundamental problem is God esteem. And sometimes, granted, I mean, I think the first story indicates that this woman was self-inflicting the punishment, and it is a means of atonement. When people deny the atonement of Jesus Christ, they will inevitably look for atonement either in masochism or sadism. They will either torture themselves or torture others in order to bring about that atonement, because the guilt in their lives will drive it and drive it and drive it until they realize that there's a reason why Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came to atone for those sins. Dave, I just don't think there's a whole bunch of faith out there. I just don't think there's a whole bunch of faith in Jesus Christ, his death, his atonement, his resurrection. And for that reason, there is precious little hope in this world. And I'm afraid so many of these young people are living out their true worldview. And their true worldview is, I am the center, and I will take control of my own life. I will take control of my own atonement. I will self-define myself by my own tattoos. I will self-determine my life, and I will not submit myself to God. I will not recognize God to be God. I will not submit myself to his law and receive his atonement in Jesus Christ. I mean, Dave, I think it's one or the other, and apostates will inevitably move in the direction of paganism.
Well, they have to. You know, ever since the temptation that you shall be as gods, men has tried to be their own gods. Look, people live out their faith, and then they have faith in the way that they live. And eating disorders shows that they're very disappointed in themselves as a god. They made a very bad god. They weren't able to provide the things they wanted. You know, I can relate. I sometimes have a hard time finishing a bowl of oatmeal too. And I put a little sugar on it, and it helps, and I eat it all up. I've had an eating disorder. I used to like to go out for lunch and eat a lot of high garlicky foods, and people just really despised that. And that was what I knew about eating disorders. Mm-hmm. But what I know here, Kevin, is that the reason that she's having a hard time loving herself is because she has not apprehended the love of God towards her. We love because we're first loved, and we have to apprehend that. There's a lot of people running around saying, I'm unworthy of love. And you know what? You're right. But that doesn't mean that God didn't love you anyway. And that's what we have to apprehend. God didn't love you because you were worthy. God loved you because he loves you.
Yeah. And Dave, I think they start with the idea that they are deserving of God's love, and they learn to love themselves first. And then once they've loved themselves first, they believe now God can love them. Instead of repenting of their self-centeredness, their self-worship, and their body worship, and then come into faith in Jesus Christ and realizing that his love for them is what overwhelms the sin in their lives and provides that atonement for the guilt and, of course, the power of sin over them.
And you used the term body worship, and this is what the secular psychologists are telling us, is that there's so much body worship in society. These girls don't believe that they're worthy of the worship that girls with better bodies are receiving. Well, this is just plain wrong.
Self-worship again. We're back to worshiping man instead of worshiping the true and living God. And Dave, I mean, I think people need to come to grips with, you're either going to worship God or worship yourself and man. And if you worship yourself and man, you're going to wind up living that out in some really weird ways. And it's going to be self-destructive.
It is. And it's hard not to have pity on some of these girls. I mean, their fathers told them they weren't beautiful, so they didn't love them. Abandoned them. And it's hard for them to apprehend their heavenly father's love when their earthly father mistreated them, didn't love them. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to have trust in love. And we have pity on those young ladies. And so I guess our message is, fathers, love your daughters, and daughters, apprehend the love of your heavenly father.
And a lot of this may have come in the breakdown of the family, Dave. The father-daughter relationships. I mean, I traced anorexia back to the 1860s, 1870s. I think it was the very, very first time that happened. But as also what you're finding in, you know, 1860s, 1870s is a breakdown of the father-daughter relationships. You're seeing a breakdown of the family already. The divorce rate in America is starting to soar already in the 1860s and 1870s. The family is starting to disintegrate in the modern age. Now, granted, today it's far, far, far worse than it was there. But the breakdown of these relationships, these family relationships, Dave, I think is seminal in the development of the social diseases of the 20th century, including autism and anorexia and the other things. I think, Dave, over the generations, it does affect the genetic code. So I don't, you know, put all the blame at any given family. I think our entire social system has yielded some of these social diseases over the generations, over four, five, six generations, to the point where you get autism and anorexia. By the way, anorexia has, I think, a certain connection with autism. At least that's according to the research that I've done. But these social diseases certainly tied into the breakdown of the family, a breakdown of social relationships in the postmodern industrial age, where you have far, far more institutionalization of human beings than you have true blue relationships where families live together, where families fellowship together, where families had decent relationships together, where families work together, where families were families together for thousands and thousands and thousands of years until the modern age with the breakdown of the nuclear family.
Kevin, we become like that which we worship. If you worship the true and living God, you become holy. You become just. You become merciful. If you worship body image, you find 16-year-old girls getting breast implants as birthday presents from their mothers, which is a common thing now, I'm told. You find girls with anorexia. You have young men absolutely spending their free time worrying about their own body image. You have a people who love death, who worship death, who are becoming more and more like that death and the living dead. You become like that which you worship. And if you worship the true and living God who loves life and gives life, you embrace that life and you become more like him. That's the answer here.
Ladies and gentlemen, our worldviews will eventually betray themselves in our outward actions. So if you want to know what a person believes, watch his actions. If somebody walks into a church all cut up and tattooed, the problem is they believe the wrong things. It's not as if they're just doing the wrong things. It's what they believe that matters. And so when you see an external problem like this, you got to say, well, what does this person believe? They must believe the wrong things. They must hold to the wrong creed. You know, and they say, well, I went into this one church and they were talking about the Apostles' Creed and how Jesus rose from the dead and all that stuff. And we said it like 150 times. And I really never believed it. So I went and got body mutilated and tattooed. Okay, granted. That's the way that people act. They will act a certain way because they really didn't believe the things they were saying. What someone says will ultimately betray itself in the way that they live. And that's why Christians believed in the resurrection of Christ. Christians wanted to celebrate Easter more than they wanted to celebrate Halloween. Christians wanted to be buried rather than cremated. Christians weren't body mutilating themselves and weren't walking around in a depressed funk and winded up starving themselves to death by anorexia. Christians don't commit suicide because they believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. They have hope. They have hope in the resurrection of Christ. And this, my friends, is the core belief of every Christian. And I want to encourage families to, yes, develop loving relationships within the home, but also teach your children a proper worldview. Teach them about the gospel of Christ. See, what is the gospel? The gospel of Christ is that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came, died on the cross for our sins, and then rose again on the third day. And whatever you do, don't forget the end of the story, and that is that Jesus Christ rose again on the third day. The resurrection of Christ is essential. It is basic for our hope. And if we don't believe it, if we don't hold to it, we're probably going to act like pagans. Well, it's time to bring back the Christian faith in the 21st century. And this, my friends, is the most basic summary of the Christian faith as found in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. You can interact with this program, my friends, by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.